4:45. It's time for this week's Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan is in the house with us. Hello.
Hi. This is a house. It's a nice house.
It's a beautiful house.
Cool. Yeah. Hey, everybody. How we doing? I know how you're doing. You don't even have to tell me. There's about half the population, which is excited, and then there's the rest of us. And that's okay. We're all here together. All my friends have been, saying, you can't complain, Eric, can't complain. You move north. I'm like, I'm past that now. I'm coming into a decade up here. I can start to complain.
Did you see the things this morning? The flurries?
I did. You know what's the worst? And maybe this is, like Robert Parker has like his palate insured for $1 million or whatever. Given what I do for a living and everything, I came outside and my kids were all, filtering out to school, and I said, it smells like snow. And lo and behold, within 1 minute.
Wow.
Christine came out, and God bless her, she denied it. And I kept pointing at flakes, and she's like, no. I'm like, wow, you're very good at denial.
Oh, yeah.
It was wonderful. But it's cool. I got my snowblower started. I know it works.
Oh, so. I thought about that because I'm a little bit behind Carrie. I mowed my lawn Sunday.
Yeah, no,
for the final time.
I also recently mowed my lawn for, I hope.
And I looked at the lawn, at the snowblower there in the garage, and I said, well, I could gas her up and check the oil and see if it'll start. And I thought, if I do that, it's going to snow.
I've already gotten, my first winter in my house, we got that like massive snowstorm in October, whatever it was.
It was Halloween, I think.
Halloween, right? Yeah, and it was just like, no. So I try to be prepared now, but that's cool. But yeah, we had a nice weekend. We were just chatting about it. I forgot to mention, speaking of good breakfast places, if anybody's ever down in Kennebunk, Maine, where my parents live, there's a great place called Boulangerie, which I highly recommend for pastries and good nosh in the morning. It's really excellent. So we're wrapping up America because next week we'll still be in this month, but I'll do my Halloween bit and talking about, rituals of wine and stuff around the world. So today we're just going to kind of wrap up and talk about, America. And we've talked about California at length, talked a little bit about Oregon, talked about Washington, talked about the hybrid varietals and kind of what's going on. And now I kind of wanted to remind everybody where it came from originally and talk about where it's going, viticulture in America. So we've always had vines here, right? If you remember when the Vikings came over, in fact, I'm sure Bangor native Sarah Parkak, who recently discovered one of the most northerly Viking settlements here in North America, can probably confirm this. Of course, they came over and they discovered a land teeming with grapes, but they just weren't the grapes that we are kind of used to drinking. But there was tons of grapes. The species Vitis lambrusca, which we talked about a little bit last week, which is sort of that foxy grape that's like Concord grapes, that's a lambrusca. Vitis riparia, rotundifolia, Vitis vulpina, all these wonderful ones. But none of them that are particularly great to drink. So as we talked about last week, there's been a lot of efforts to sort of hybridize those because, of course, they were here naturally. They like it here. But it doesn't make it necessarily fun to drink. So people have been, bending their efforts in the labs and out in the vineyards to try and make stuff more palatable. But it is important to remember that when people got here, there was already the grapes and there was potential for that. In fact, noted Italian explorer Giovanni Verrazzano, who, if you're from my part of the world, you know him a little bit better for his famous bridge, which he did not build, but is named after him. But he also noted the grapes in the New York area, obviously where he's famous for exploring. They've been around.
He explored Maine as well.
He did.
And wrote in his journal, the first known instance of this in America, trading with some of the natives the coast, and they weren't happy with the trade once and mooned him.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
Well, there you go. See, that's a better bit of information than I come armed with. I would have loved to have seen that. That would have been absolutely glorious.
Stick that in your bridge, Verrazzano.
Hey, did that just open the floodgates for everything that's followed
since?
Yes,
I believe
it's entirely possible. Like, well, we don't take our mooning lightly. The first wine made in the continental U.S. was made in Florida in the 1560s. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Spanish explorers, obviously, similar to our friend Junipero Serra, who was the Hispanic missionary over in Baja that started the first plantings out there. We talked about that about 2 months ago. But yeah, so in the 1560s, in some of the Spanish settlements, they made wine. It wasn't very good, but you know, it also wasn't really the goal. However, and as we're going to sort of follow up with our example wine today, in the charters, the founding charters of Virginia and both Carolinas, it was in there that they were to try and make wine a vital part of the landscape, agriculturally and of course then financially, because of course, you know, these folks saw what wine represented for you know, the entire economic system over in places like France, Germany, etc. And so they really wanted that to be part of the deal when they came over. And of course, they also knew that they, frankly, you know, people here would want to drink. And lo and behold, they were right. So the first wine made in Virginia was made in 1619. The Virginia Company shipped over plantings, and they planted them, and they're doing okay. And then, as we've talked about many, many times, problems ensued. The phylloxera louse that like to eat those vineyard roots. So, but the wave had started, right? So from there, the grapes proliferated over, you know, much of the, you know, what is the American South, the Ohio River valleys, Indiana, Ohio, which also led to the first commercially successful wine in America, which was in the 1830s, 1840s, was Pink Catawba, which is from Ohio, which is obviously not thought of right now as some great, you know, land of American viticulture. But there is, of course, wine made there still, and there is wine made in all 50 states. It's important to keep that in mind. I mean, Americans view it as I said, as they did back when they were founding this country, as a vital part of the agriculture scene and also it's an economic driver. I mean, agritourism is a very viable thing and will continue to be. Of course, in places where they have difficulty growing grapes, they bring in some grapes. I mean, and there's places like that here in Maine. They don't even bother really trying to grow grapes. They just bring them in from Washington State, California, things like that. Whether or not that's a good thing is not the point. The point is that someone in every state and lots of people in every state have realized that this is something that they need to do, even if it's just for tourist dollars and not necessarily to make anything particularly great. Excuse me. So what happened? So we had actually commercially successful wine made in Ohio in the 1830s, and then pretty much everything went to general heck. Then we did a couple world wars. We had prohibition. America just kind of got knocked sideways in terms of its agricultural production of alcoholic beverages. And so it took a while for us to get back on our feet. And of course, you know, now over the past 2 months, we've talked about how the West Coast did. And then last week, we talked a little bit about how, you know, the Finger Lakes region, things like that. But today we're going to talk about the revitalization of the original colonies, right? So Virginia, we're going to have a wine that I believe we've had the Viognier from these folks before. This is Barbersville Vineyards. This is an estate on the former grounds of the estate of Governor James Barber, who was the first governor of Virginia. The estate was designed by Thomas Jefferson, a guy you may have heard of, and certainly a huge enophile. That's a good thing. That means a wine lover, just in case anybody is not literate. This is a Cabernet Franc, right? That's a vinifera grape. Neat. So that's the kind of wine we like to drink, right? That's the kind of grapes that they were probably originally shipping over. Now they're grafting onto American rootstock, as we've talked about many times in this program. This is a project of the scion of the Zardetto company. So Zardetto Prosecco, very big Italian concern, got himself a winemaker from Piedmont, Italy, another part of Italy, which he said that the hills of Virginia were very similar to the hills of Piedmont, and so that's where he sourced his winemaker from. They went about planting the Bordelais and French varietals that they thought originally could grow very well there. They're right. They just needed to sort of figure out that there was this bug that liked to eat the rootstocks. Now that they have, they're making very, very nice wine in Virginia and in a lot of parts of the Mid-Atlantic. And I would suggest, even though, sadly, there's not a lot available here in Maine, if you're ever traveling south along the eastern seaboard, of course, Rich was just mentioning that he was in Williamsburg, Virginia for a football game the other day. Check out what's local. Ask your server or something if you're out to a restaurant. anything of quality local that I should try, because there really is some interesting stuff in the Carolinas, in Virginia, in New Jersey, Pennsylvania. I've probably mentioned on air before, my brother works at a good winery in New Jersey. They're out there. So check them out. I really think it's fantastic.
This is very nice.
Yeah. Nice Cabernet Franc. So, you know, medium bodied, great. A little bit of sort of that berry tang. It goes great at this time of year with a lot of the stuff that we find ourselves eating. Great Thanksgiving wine, obviously kind of appropriate there. Want to mention really quick before we have to leave, our tasting for next month is right before Thanksgiving. It will be on the 15th from 5 to 7, and of course we'll be featuring wines and other beverages and tasties that will be great for your Thanksgiving table and for putting up with family and friends like you got to. I know. I'm there. Like I mentioned, with all due respect to my parents, I was with my parents this weekend. I know what it's like. As I put in my newsletter, my dad and I are both cut from the same hunk of wood, as it were, and sometimes that's great and sometimes it's volatile. So we're there for you. Yeah. Come out and try the best of what America has to offer, and we'll see you in the store. Bye.
Where are we going next week?
Next week, we're doing Halloween.
Oh,
next week
fantastic.
Is Halloween. Yeah, so last year it fell on Halloween, so this year it'll be the day before Halloween, and we'll talk about rituals, sacrifices, and bloody deeds involving wine.
Well, we'll put a tarp down.
All right. very good.
Thanks, Eric.
Cheers.
Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Ammon Street, downtown Bangor.